Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767 or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
Javi Baez rescued the Cubs with a three-run homer to salvage a split with the lowly Mets and stay in first place. Why does it seem like the Cubs have been worse than 3-3 over the past week? And what is your biggest concern at the moment?
I think it's feeling like the Cubs have been worse than 3-3 because of the way they lost on Friday and Saturday. I mean, those were sloppy losses. And so you went into yesterday knowing they needed to get something different to change sort of the momentum, and it doesn't feel like a team that's clicking on all cylinders. And you look at their standings and you look at, you know, obviously they're in first place, you can justify and rationalize all you want, but they don't feel like a team that resembles a contender, a National League pennant contender, because they've been a little bit lax on the bases. You saw examples of that over the weekend with Almora and Anthony Rizzo. You've seen defensive lapses, you've seen pitching breakdowns. I think if you had to look at your biggest concern at the moment, I think it's an individual. Jose Quintana has been disappointing. He's had the Cubs are 0-6 in his last 9 starts. They're 1-8 in those games. This is a guy that just needs to be better. He has not been worth the everyone's going to evaluate the trade almost every start now. That's not necessarily fair, but he's got to do more to change the subject. He's got to do more to convince us that he is a guy that you can trust, and he just hasn't been that guy. I like Jose Quintana. I think he's very good fit. I understand the trade even now. Even after Aloy looks like he's going to be a star and Dylan Cease is at AAA, he hasn't won a game since May 5th. And with Albert Alzale on the rise and Jose Quintana, you know, pretty middling lately, you wonder where that is headed. You wonder if that issue, and that's my biggest concern. That runners in scoring position and the bullpen has been pretty good, but I would think the Cubs just haven't looked like one of the best teams in the National League, and that's why even though they're 3-3 in first place, you feel like you want more.
You know, the starters, there are question marks, but middle relievers, they kind of scare me, because even if the Cubs have a lead, there's no guarantee that if they get through the middle relievers or the closers that they have at their options right now, that they're going to be able to end with a victory or even get a good outing on them or get some good innings to maybe, you know, get a relief for a starting pitcher if he doesn't have the beginning of a great outing. But a professional like Rizzo in his base running errors over the last few weeks, it's not only yesterday, there's other ones that have come back, and you think of getting caught in between second and third, trying to stretch a base hit into a double when he really doesn't have the speed to do so. And then I'm not excited about the leadoff man.
Schwarber?
Yeah. I know he's got four home runs out of
right.
the leadoff position.
Right.
However, It doesn't bring you a fear. It doesn't bring you a fear of putting speed on the bases. Here, let's try to make him swing at pitches or get him to strike out.
You want the traditional speed guy. Get on first base, create a distraction.
Yeah. I would rather have Javi Baez as the leadoff guy and see if you can maybe change the back end of the lineup to get some support behind him, or being able to get him on the bases to support the starting pitcher to maybe to get him around. So, you know, that's the thing about it is, and it was Contreras a couple weeks ago that he was trying to steal, you know, home from third base and then got caught easily at home. So I think if you just do the fundamental things
right.
better, then you have an opportunity to make the whole team better. The pitcher that came in the other night, I don't want to mispronounce his name, Albert Alzale.
Yep.
I was really excited to see what he does the second time around. He's got great enthusiasm about him. And, you know, that middle spot is a different one you prepare mentally to start the game with, because there's a little bit more pressure on you. And, you know, how will he handle that? So I'm interested to see that. But you know, Rizzo, take the hit you got. Don't try to stretch something into a knot, because you know if that is the last out of the inning, or you
run into trouble,
you could stay on base. So that's my concern. Lead off, middle relievers, and just fundamental base running.
Yeah, 3-3 feels so much worse because you had the White Sox and the Mets to open this 10-game homestand, and this is the time you're supposed to take advantage. So it's been disappointing. Then you get to the way that they lost. Like David, you brought up first, you have the Aloy game, and also in that Aloy game, you couldn't do anything against Ivan Nova. Cubs were expected to win. Friday, Darvish is giving up the home run ball. Guys like Jeff McNeil, as you've never heard of on the Mets, are hurting you. And then Saturday, the Q loss felt like two or three losses just in one game. As soon as you turn it on, okay, I'm good. I guess I'm not spending my Saturday watching any Cubs baseball today. Quintana's ERA now almost as high as Yu Darvish, up to 4.50 on the season. We know the bullpen has been an issue since week one of the season, but I'm looking at the starting rotation. Now they're going to a six-man right now without Hendricks. Boy, you see the holes. You need so much more from Quintana. Darvish, you're not getting it. And then quietly, Lester starts with a 1.16 ERA. And then over the last seven starts, he has a 7.17 ERA. We knew regression was coming, but we didn't know it was going to come that hard and that fast. So right now, my big concern with the Cubs is starting pitching.
Isn't that something?
They
carry them early, and then now you start to look at them. And you're right, Joe. I mean, that's the biggest concern.
Well, that's the problem when you have a rotation of all these guys that are 30 and above, is that over the course of the season, they will wear down and attrition will take its toll on these guys. It's already happened to Kyle Hendricks, apparently, who's supposed to be the young gun of the bunch, and he's the first one to hit the DL. You mentioned Lester, how ineffective he's been lately, Joe, and Darvish and Quintana. You really never know what you're going to get from either one of those guys at this point when they go out there. As far as Hamels, he was great again yesterday, but he's already lost a couple of ticks on his fastball just from the start of the season at age 35. You wonder how he's going to be able to hold up, and you don't have him for this big series against Atlanta coming up here, where, I mean, I don't want to say you have to take 3 out of 4. You don't have to do anything at this point of the season, but it would be a nice shift in momentum, because not only are they 500 on the road trip, but they're 4-6 in the last 10. 10-10 in their last 20, and 13-17 in their past 30 games, which is why things probably don't feel as good as you might think for a team that's in first place. But right now they have the 7th best record in all of baseball. Do I think they're the 7th best team in baseball? No, I think they're probably a little bit better than that when all things are clicking and all things are firing on the right cylinder. But I would be a little bit concerned with this pitching rotation going forward, given what you've seen in terms of inconsistency of all those guys I've just mentioned, and the age factor as well.
Yeah, among all of the issues the Cubs seem to be having, it's absolutely the starting pitching that is the most glaring. Jose Quintana is an issue every time he goes out there. He's not giving you anything. Yu Darvish, as small, he keeps making these small steps and then steps backward. So it's very inconsistent there, and you guys brought it up. With no Kyle Hendricks in this rotation, there's no kind of anchor of the starting rotation to give you a consistent outing every fifth day. And I'm hoping John Lester comes back to being John Lester, but as the analytics have told us, maybe that's it. Maybe this is, as Joe brought up, maybe this is the regression that has been forecast.
Maybe our question should have been, which Cubs pitcher ticked you off more over the weekend? Yu Darvish on Friday blowing that lead, or Jose Quintana on Saturday?
Quintana.
Okay.
I mean, that's me. I don't know everybody else.
I mean, Darvish, though, that home run, it was just...
Has Darvish done anything to make you excited so you can retreat to be disappointed? You know, I know he had a good outing a couple outings ago where he had the 10 strikeouts, I believe. But for the big picture of what you're supposed to be excited about, there hasn't been a lot to be excited about.
It's just so few and far between. True. With Darvish, is that he'll have one good start and everybody will be like, okay, well, maybe this is where he turns it around, and then he'll have three clankers in a row, and you just don't know what to do with him.
It's a tough one, Bruce. It's a very fair question, and obviously a ripe one.
What was the most disappointing part of the White Sox losing the weekend series to the Rangers? And tonight, Lucas Giolito goes into Boston to begin a 6-game stretch against the Red Sox and the Twins. How many of those games can the Sox realistically win?
Wow. That's a good... It seems like the whole conversation with the Sox is this 500 mark. You got to stop being obsessed about just being 500. You eventually have to climb over that hump and start, you know, cultivating the talent they have here, but start winning games that they're unexpected to win. I kind of have to revert to Giolito's last start against the Cubs, because I'm still so disappointed in the outcome of that game, because if there was one bright spot within the starting pitching staff, it was like, man, he's really turned the corner from last year. He's going to come and bring this thing home. He's going to help grow this pitching staff to a point where, yeah, they may not get respect around the league, but if they can get to their bullpen with within a run or with it, you know, some type of lead, they hit the ball well enough to get the Sox back into it. So with Giolito pitching, there's high expectations still for him, but if he goes out there and he lays an egg, then I think it's almost people are going to start thinking about last year and not what he's done up into this season, just because there was so much attention focused on him in that White Sox-Cubs series, and now there's a little bit more East Coast high profile to, you know, the Red Sox.
So the Sox take a 4-0 lead on Saturday night, and there was no confidence that they were going to protect it because of the starting pitcher. They every time that Despaigne takes the mound, it feels like a concession. And then Nova goes on the mound yesterday, and he's entitled to this. This is kind of who he is, up and down. But still, when you have those guys rounding out your starting rotation, it's demoralizing. It's got to be deflating in the clubhouse. You've got Giolito, and you're right, Tom, but there's so much pressure on him to do everything right in every single start. The margin for error is so thin with this rotation. Give yourself a chance, Rick Hahn. I don't know what you do, but I think that if I were a Sox fan, I would rather lose with prospects, guys who maybe part of the solution moving forward than with guys who you sign because you have no better options. And Ricky Renteria talks yesterday, says, well, Despaigne is going to start until he doesn't. That doesn't exactly sound like a vote of confidence, and he hasn't earned one. So I think that's the hardest part with this Sox team looking forward, is like you miss Dylan Covey. I mean, you miss a guy who really hasn't proven himself as a major league starter yet anyway, and there's so much pressure on Giolito, and there's so much pressure on Lopez. Give these guys a little bit of chance, because you know what? The rest of the team around the starting rotation, they're playing well, and they're exciting, and there's a lot to be positive about with the White Sox. Even the bullpen has been pretty much a lockdown bullpen, especially the back end, going into the Boston and then playing against the Twins back in Chicago. I think they'll be, realistically, the way as inconsistent as the rotation has been, you're looking for
don't say 500.
A split.
See, I mean, that's just it. It's that narrative has to change.
Yeah. How do you, first off, Saturday, it's just a give-up game. When you see Despaigne out there, it gives you three innings, and the other relievers they throw out. That's just how they're looking at it. And they were in the ballgame, and that's what's pretty frustrating. It jumps out to me over the weekend is you have a series with a team that's had a surprisingly pretty good year with the Rangers, and the Sox were in the game. They were in yesterday's game as well, as they were threatening late. So how that they are pretty close as far as the roster goes to getting to that 500 mark and then getting above that 500 mark like teams like Texas. But the roster's just short. They've made this decision as an organization. And how do you avoid the conversation with Dylan Cease? You really can't. And right now, his ERA is up to 4.69. He's having a rough stretch.
Sometimes, do you think that's related, Joe, to possibly that he knows what's going on? He's so aware.
And I think he's bored.
Maybe so.
Sometimes you see that with guys. They get tested, then they get frustrated. They realize they're not coming up at a certain point, or maybe he's told it's going to be not going to happen until the end of the season, and then you don't see the same performance. We've seen that from a bunch of guys. So how do they handle this? Do they think he's ready now, or do they think, okay, now we want to see him come back from these struggles and go back to dominating at the AAA level? That'll be interesting to watch. You have Giolito going today to get the next stretch of six games. Boston, they're below 500 at home. It's not like they're the dominant team that we saw from a year ago.
Same record as the Cubs.
The Twins having...
Just saying.
Yeah, exactly. The Twins having a great season, of course. How many can they realistically win? It's still baseball. It's not like Sales lights out every time. His last start, he only went five innings, and they're going to play him in the third game of that series. They can split against these two excellent teams.
Same win total as the Cubs before the Texters mobilize.
Oh, they will.
I know.
Oh, you got something wrong. Gotta yell.
They will all assemble.
You know, we could talk about the pitching staff all day long, and we have because it's dreadful. And Nova now back-to-back decent starts. He's got the ERA under 6, so there's small little victories and baby steps that they're taking there. But if I could sum up the most disappointing part of the weekend, to me, it's not the pitching. It's Yonder Alonso and just his presence on this roster. The fact that he is taking away at-bats from Zach Collins, who debuted on Friday with a very long home run. And ideally, you would like to see him get as many at-bats as possible, whether he's DHing, whether he's playing first base, whether he's catching periodically. Probably not where he's going to end up long-term, but you can put him in there for a game or two. So you can put him at various spots, yet for some reason, you start Yonder Alonso yesterday. He hits into a double play. He strikes out with the game on the line. He made an error in that game. I think Ricky Renteria after the game said he's not the same player that he once was. No kidding. What is he, about 35? He looks like he's about 35 pounds overweight, too. Maybe if you hit the Atkins diet or something, Yonder, you might be able to get around on a fastball, for crying out loud. This guy is no business on a major league roster, and he's taking away bats now actively from young players who could be here and be contributing in the future. So enough of the Yonder Alonso thing. Get him the hell out of here. As far as Lucas Giolito, I expect him to bounce back. He's the one good pitcher they have, so I'm hoping that he bounces back, because if not, Tom, they're never going to get to 500, and I know that's going to be very disappointing for both you and I.
Well, Despaigne is the lowest hanging fruit in terms of the issues with the White Sox starting rotation.
Then crush it, Ray.
Yeah, that's who I have to go with. And you know, Steve Stone on the broadcast the other day was talking about how you know Renteria and Cooper have been telling him you can't fall behind when you're out there. You just cannot fall behind, because he does not have the stuff he doesn't have any good stuff. You know, so that it's just the same issue repeatedly. He's bad. He's bad. You got to send him out with Yonder Alonso. Like Kevbo said, that's the biggest issue in this in a bad starting rotation. Other than Giolito, that's the biggest glaring issue in terms of the Boston series. Anytime Lucas Giolito takes the mound, he's given the White Sox a chance to win. I'm going to say they at least win that one game.
You know, I think the heat in Texas took a toll on the pitcher yesterday, because when you look at it, I looked it up. It was 90 degrees, but it felt like 100. So if you go out there in those uniforms and you got that heat pounding on you, if there's going to be any position that's going to take a toll on, it's going to be the pitcher-catcher.
That's a good point.
The cramped quarter. Yeah. So I'm glad Giolito did not pitch in Texas, because I think that it's not going to take a start out of you, but I think he'll be more efficient in the cooler conditions than in that Texas heat.
Tom, what color was the piping on those uniforms?
Black and white. Okay. They're black and white, wasn't right. It yesterday?
I just wanted to ask you
and
that.
And then the red.
Because Jeff always asks you that. Always wanted to ask you that at least
bright,
once.
The bright red on the Texas. Yeah. You know, I think they're both heat-absorbing uniforms, but if you are not in great shape and you're out right there standing on the mound under that obsessive heat, it hurts you.
You know, that's a good question.
What did you think of Mets manager Mickey Callaway and pitcher Jason Vargas going after a media member in the visiting Wrigley Field clubhouse after Sunday's game? What should Major League Baseball and the Mets do? And are there times when that's justified, depending on the media member?
Well, I think there's some media members that probably would invite that kind of behavior. There's probably some media members that I have worked with and have observed that would relish that kind of reaction from the person they're either interviewing or in the person they have antagonized in a clubhouse or a locker room. That said, there's no place for that in a clubhouse or a locker room. And if MLB, they need to let the Mets act, because if the Mets can take care of this in a way that's responsible, and I think that involves probably a suspension for Callaway, you suspend him for a game. You can't tolerate a guy going after somebody doing their job. It wasn't antagonistic. There might have been some tone that was implied, but you don't do that. And then as far as Vargas getting involved, that was none of his business. And he, you know, threatening somebody in the workplace, that's not acceptable either. So the Mets have to step in, fine or suspension for one or both. If they don't, then MLB needs to get involved. I think they probably will. The Mets issued a statement. There will be a further look into this today. Mickey Callaway would be lucky to have his job by the end of the week at this rate, because this is a guy who, just think about this, though, five outs. They are five outs away from taking 3 out of 4 from the Cubs. He stays with his reliever a little bit too long, doesn't go to his closer, answers a question, gets testy, goes after a reporter, and he could be fired tomorrow. if not by the end of today. Who knows what could happen? It's New York. It's the New York media. I think there are no times when it's justified to go after somebody like that, even though they might deserve it. So the Mets have some explaining to do.
Is there a cooling off period between the end of the game and when they let the media go in baseball? Because I know there is in football, just to be able to capture your emotions so you don't have one of these explosive scenarios.
Yep.
If a media member does come up and ask you and a question that they need knowledge of, but may the player may be insulted by it. And, you know, sometimes when, you start getting players sticking up for the coaches or vice versa, then it kind of becomes more of an explosive situation because you have more than just one person involved now. Because we've seen highlights of players in every sport where one player confronts one media member and that's where it stays. But when you start getting multiple bodies involved, it's almost like you have to stick up for your teammates. You know, the best cure to this is make better decisions as a manager and then win a game. But who in the heck is going to be able to predict the swing that Javi Baez had to get the ball out of the park at that point? It's just a good baseball player with a great swing that got it out of the park, and then now you ignite the switch when you get that crowd involved in Wrigley Field, and then it doesn't stop haunting you while you're sitting in the dugout because that's all you can hear is the fanfare, the celebration, the excitement of that crowd. And sometimes you do carry that into the locker room with you because you don't have that support at home. So now you got all these emotions after the game, and you know I think there will be an apology. I think there will be a cooling off period, and then you're going to be able to have the Mets go on to their next opponent, and the Cubs they use this as a rallying point. It's excitement in their locker room is different because, like I mentioned, the day before they get beat 10-1, the catcher walks off the field and he tips his cap to the crowd because he just got three guys out. It's just a different set of emotions and maybe what the manager allows these guys to be.
Different culture created by the manager.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it sounded like the media was really getting after Callaway or just kept asking him why they didn't bring the closer in earlier for the 4 or 5 out save and Edwin Diaz before the Baez homer. But, of course, always easy after the fact to say what you should have done. Big fan, by the way, of the New York Daily News back page. I don't know if you guys saw it.
Yeah.
Mickey Mouth Club. It's fantastic.
Gotta love that.
So that Tim Healy, what a piece of garbage. Says, see you tomorrow. What kind of person is this? Shouldn't be allowed in the locker room anymore.
How dare he?
How'd see you tomorrow? Yeah, we don't know the tone, though, but I honestly think Callaway is trying to do what it felt like Robin Ventura was trying to do for a while. He's trying to get fired. He's been on the hot seat all season long in New York. I mean, this is going to be wild to watch the reaction
Joe
today.
Girardi on line two.
Oh, man. Yeah, exactly. I'm sure. So the owner, Jeff Wilpon, actually called the reporter. I'm surprised they haven't done more at this point. They've had so much time. I don't think they're going to fire him, but there might be so much heat that they might end up being forced to just fire Callaway and move on. The Vargas side, there's no excuses there. So apparently he was staring him down for what felt like, the reporter Tim Healy said, it felt like 45 seconds. Then he physically threatened him. Then he stepped towards him, and Mets players had to jump in between. So I think what Vargas did was much worse.
Yeah, Vargas is a little bit of a psycho. I mean, you saw him out there at Wrigley on Friday barking at the umpire, almost flipping out after the Rizzo check swing fiasco. And Vargas is definitely a scary dude when he gets worked up, and there's no excuse for what he did. I mean, that's just, what the hell are you doing, trying to intimidate this reporter? But I think it starts with the manager and starts with the, not only the culture, like you guys said, that they have in that locker room. It starts with the manager, but him and his lack of composure and his short fuse, whatever you want to call it, yesterday. Look, rough loss, no question about it, but it comes with the territory, man. You're going to have to answer questions from these guys after the games, win, lose. It's just part of the job. You got to do it 162 times. There are very few jobs in baseball, managerial jobs. You got one of them. You have to do things like this even after a rough loss like that. So Mickey Callaway, yeah, total clown show. I think that they've been looking for an excuse to fire him. This would probably be it. They probably should. They underachieved last year. They're underachieving this year. And he has clearly shown that he doesn't have the makeup to be a major league manager and be able to keep his guys in line.
There's, being in the hot seat, sucks, sure, but there's no excuse. There's no excuse. It's unprofessional. And, you know, Callaway is just a jerk. So if he doesn't get fired, this is the perfect opportunity to do it. Maybe a one-game suspension. But Vargas, this guy, it's a totally different story. I mean, charging at a reporter and staring him down like that, you know, threatening like physical intimidation. This guy needs to be suspended for more than a game. There's no excuse for this. There's absolutely no excuse for it at all. And is there ever a time when it's justified? No, it's never justified. You're a professional. Be a professional.
You know, I think this will get washed over. I think there'll be apologies all around. And just to kind of go off on a tangent, is anybody offended at the end of the Louisville Vandy game, if anybody saw that?
The pitcher?
Yeah. So, I mean, who's teaching the lesson? Who? Is it college kids taking it to the professional level, or is it the college kids learning from the professional level and bringing it down? So I know it's a weird analogy.
No, I want to get back to that. That's interesting, because I saw that and I wondered the parallel and where that's all coming from.
Well, I was offended by the Louisville pitcher attacking a guy that he just struck out and standing on the mound, because, listen, so that's what I'm saying. Vargas, yeah, he may go at a media member. He's not going to fight. And they're not going to allow him to fight. I've seen it on the sidelines, and I've seen it in the locker room where they're just waiting for someone to step in, like a basketball fight.
Let me,
and it's the same thing there. Now you stand on the mound, and you know that batter's not going to come at you, and all of a sudden you're going to go fisticuffs there. But you walk back into the dugout thinking you're a bad guy because you're chirping at a guy you just struck out.
That's a hard question to ask.
It's a pretty important question to answer, though.
When the Bulls introduced draft picks Coby White and Daniel Gafford, to the Chicago media today at 2 o'clock, what do you expect to hear and what do you hope to hear? Does their arrival affect your belief in the rebuild?
Yeah, I'm looking for the excitement. And I know the the reaction of White when he was at the podium and his buddy got drafted and he had just the wow.
That was cool.
Obviously the basketball needs to be brought up the court, and it needs to be distributed efficiently to get everybody involved on this basketball team. If the Bulls are going to make any headway without having a superstar like the first couple guys drafted. So, I mean, I'm excited for a guy coming with great enthusiasm to a basketball team that needs it. It's a fan base that wants to be excited about having a facilitator on the court and being able to help these guys out. So if he's fast and he can play basketball, you didn't bring him in here to be a Curry where he's just shooting 3-point shots. You want him to get everybody else involved. So, you know, I like the fun that they could have with him, and I like the speed at which he plays with, because his speed is going to make his teammates faster. They're going to have to get up the court more efficiently. They're going to have to get in position to run offensive schemes with a guy that has the ability to get up the court. So I'm all for it, and I'm disappointed. You know, last week I was listening to you guys, and Kendall Gill was on, and he said this is a two-man draft. I'm disappointed to hear, not because Kendall knows more about basketball than I would ever hope to know. However, I want it to be bigger than a two-man draft.
Right.
I want these guys that are picked a little bit down the line, like Kawhi Leonard picked 15th and Klay Thompson picked 11th during their time. I want these guys to be able to come to their teams and help them get better, and hopefully a year or two out, it's a better basketball
That'd be
team.
Great if they found Coby White was a like that kind of a guy, the Klay Thompson type impact. I think you'll hear today how much the intangibles jumped off the charts, and when you're evaluating these guys, both Gafford and Coby White, they're going to make strong impressions. They're humble guys, they're committed guys, and they have great backstories. That's going to be the takeaway today, because on the court, their athleticism, you see that there's a lot to get excited about. There's a lot to get excited about the way that Coby White plays and the pace with which he plays. The offense is going to be faster. Gafford is going to be a guy that probably – you don't know what to expect from a second-round pick, but defensively he gives you length. He gives you some presence, in a rim protector potentially. And I think after today you're going to feel a little bit better than about the rebuild, because you'll hear from them firsthand. But if you're against the rebuild, you're not going to hear anything that changes your mind. I think there's very distinct camps here with the Bulls, and people that want to give them a chance and are willing to, and people who have already made their minds up about Gar Packs. And they're going to hear, doesn't matter who they hear from today, they're going to still feel the way they do right now.
I expect a lot of Bulls fans to fall in love with Coby White again like they did on Thursday and Friday. It sounds like most Bulls fans very excited after reading the Players Tribune article, and as Tom mentioned, his reaction to his buddy Cameron Johnson being drafted. And it's really going to be all about Coby White, and nothing against Daniel Gafford, but I don't think anybody's really going to pay much attention to him. He'll be sitting up there while White answers most of the questions. I want to hear about what's going to happen from day one. I think most of us realize they're going to bring in a veteran point guard, and they'll say the right things publicly about Chris Dunn, but he doesn't have a future with this team. They've made that evident by the comments that they've made to the media in public. Does it affect my belief in the rebuild? It does a little bit. It's really hard to do because Gar Packs has been here so long, but if you're able to push the failed rebuilds aside and some of the mistakes that they've made in the past, and they've made a share, they probably should have been fired multiple times over. But when, if we're just focusing on this rebuild and what's happened in the last 2 years and the young talent that they've acquired with Markkanen and Carter, Levine and Porter in a deal, if you're just focused on that, stay healthy, it seems like there could be something coming up down the line.
I love the Bulls. I love going to Bulls games. Love watching the Bulls. I want them to be really good. But it is just so hard to get excited about this franchise right now because, like you said, the guys that are in charge of it have failed so many times over, and there's zero accountability. Now, with Coby White, it's a player with a lot of potential, a player that, yeah, could get people excited potentially, but he was the seventh pick in this draft for a reason. There were ostensibly six players better than him. It's not always how it works out, and there have been really good players taken outside the top five or the top ten, whatever you have there, but it's the exception, not the rule. So I'm going to be really optimistic about Coby White, but I think people should probably pump the brakes a little bit. I don't think he'll be playing a ton earlier in the season. He is a really raw player, has a lot to work on in terms of ball distribution, not turning the ball over. His jump shot could certainly get a lot better. So I'm optimistic about Coby White. I like the pick, no question about it. It's just that there's kind of this dark cloud over the franchise. Like, why would you trust this guy, these guys to get it right when they haven't been able to do so in 15 years?
I expect to, you know, I kind of expect it to be an emotional press conference from the perspective of Coby White. We've heard the story about his father passing away and all of that. I expect a lot of positivity. He seems like a really good kid. So I think that's what I expect to hear today. What do I hope to hear? Joe touched on it. I mean, Chris Dunn seemingly potentially is done with the Bulls. We'll see what this point guard competition turns out to be. I want to hear a little bit more about that. And does their arrival affect my belief in the Bulls rebuild? I mean, Kevbo pointed this out. The Bulls have been in basketball hell, essentially. The seventh pick for the last number of, you know, past few years in the draft. And I you know, he has great potential. He has good potential to be a good point guard. But the Bulls had to, although they did well for themselves in filling a need with that point guard position, for them to get lucky, that's what they needed in this draft. They needed to get a Zion Williamson, a Ja Morant, one of those two potentially franchise-altering players. They just didn't. So that's where we're at.
That's a good question, David.
This segment brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Western Conference champion Chicago Wolves would like to thank their loyal fans for making this 25th anniversary so special. Thank you, and see you in October. What did you think of the Blackhawks drafting center Kirby Dock third overall? Do you side with analysts who believe the Hawks took Dock over two more NHL-ready players in Alex Turcotte and Bowen Byram, or Stan Bowman, who thinks Dock could be the best player in the draft?
Nice job with the hockey names, Kevin. In the interest of time, I'll make this brief. I was a little bit surprised. I felt like it was a bit of a reach at the time because the other two guys you heard more about, maybe I knew more about. But when you read more about what they did in terms of the conviction they felt in picking Doc, you have to trust their judgment. Reading Bob Verdi on ChicagoBlackhawks.com, they identified Doc early on after the combine. They said, this is the guy that we want to draft. This is the guy we see a lot of Jonathan Toews in. This is the guy that we can grow with, maybe not next year, but over in the future with a young coach with a centerpiece like this. I'm going to trust their judgment. They have been pretty good at drafting and developing players. So as after I got up past the surprise, mild surprise, I have a lot of confidence that they know what they're doing here.
Well, you know, it's interesting because this guy is willing to play where the team needs him the most. So he was playing on the wing this past year, but he's going to come to the Blackhawks and play center. So if the Blackhawks are just looking for a specific player to come in and fit a position that they need most to help this hockey team down the road, I'm interested to talk to Jeremy about what is the time frame for this guy? What is the, because if you're going to draft a guy this high and you think there's a period, he's a period of time away from coming in and competing and contributing, then that would be the only thing that would make me nervous. But if you're looking for a person that fits your roster the best in the position, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I was also surprised on Friday evening, only because the analysts, those that cover this for a living, were saying that Byram and Turcotte would probably go earlier, but the Blackhawks are the team that wear rings.
But you don't have to mock me, Joe.
What? You weren't.
You don't have to mock me.
Hey, no. I was on Friday. I had to cover this thing. I had a Jay Zawoski on the line as soon as this happened.
Jay was surprised, so I was encouraged that he was surprised,
yes,
too.
Yes, yes. Bowman really stepped out. It's kind of crazy to say that after a guy that's a GM of a dynasty. But luck was on their side. They moved all the way up to number three. That doesn't happen too often. And they took the guy that it sounded like they could have gotten at five or six. So it really seems like the pressure is going to be on Bowman a little bit, but I'll side with Bowman with the amount of success that he's had.
Unfortunately, we are short on time here because I have a notebook of NHL draft notes that I was keeping track of on Friday. It's like a thick book like you've never seen before, filled with
what a relief
NHL draft analysis. But the fact is, I couldn't make out Kirby Doc from Kirby Puckett if the two walked in here right now, one of them back from the dead. But I'm excited to hear you guys talk to Jeremy Colleton at 8:40. I'm sure he's going to have much more to say than I do.
Very quickly, I was also surprised, as everybody is apparently, and their one quick note was Doc is a center, but he played wing with Team Canada for a little stint, and apparently the versatility there is something that Stan Bowman really liked. So a quick note on that. We'll see what this kid turns out to be.
That's hockey, baby!
All right, that's a 5 of 5, 312-644-6767. Let us know what you think. Mullen Hall with Tom Thayer in for Mike Mulligan, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.